The scripture reading is in Exodus chapter 1, the first 7 verses. So if you will find it, then stand, I will read it to you. Now these are the names of the children of Israel, which came into Egypt, every man and his household. Came with Jacob, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls. For Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation. And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. You may be seated. Through the reading, you may notice that 70 people came into Egypt, and in a short time, around 2 centuries, they grew to over 2 million in population. The blessings that the Abrahamic covenant had outlined had been fulfilled right from the beginning. But something happened that brought about the curses. But let's leave the Israelites in Egypt for a while. And let's look what happened to their descendants over 3,500 years later. About 6 weeks ago, we had a mass shooting at Newtown, Connecticut Elementary School. But did it actually happen the way the government said it did? There are many unanswered questions. Adam Lanza. There is very little information on him. His brother said he hadn't seen him in 2 years. Yet Adam had his brother's identification card on him when he was allegedly shot, and the blame was first put on the brother. We're not sure what school he went to or whether or not he was homeschooled. We're not even sure that he murdered his mother. And we have the work of an investigative reporter who found that his death certificate said that he died on December 13th, one day before the mass murders. The reporter asked the question, how could Adam have gone to Newtown Elementary School and murder 20 school children if he was already dead? She wrote a letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein asking for her resignation. She based that on Dianne's remarks that she had been working on the anti-assault bill for over a year. And she said that now that Newtown Elementary School shooting had occurred, why any American wouldn't want the assault rifle banned. There were 3 individuals from Adam's father, Peter Lanza's work, General Electric, have already been prosecuted in the LIBOR, L-I-B-O-R, the LIBOR investigations. What was Peter's relation in this case? And then there's Adam's mother, Nancy Lanza. She previously worked with Chase Manhattan Bank. It was wrongly said that she was at present a kindergarten teacher at Newtown Elementary School who was killed at the school by her son. I personally heard that. Then it was changed. She was a frequent substitute teacher. It ended up there's no record of her being employed by the school system at all. Then there was a story that Adam had a dispute with four of the teachers and administrators at the school the day before. Later, however, the police officer said this dispute was untrue. Lieutenant Vance of the Connecticut State Police mentioned this at one of the press conferences that he held. What would Adam have looked like if he indeed carried in two or three handguns, an A-15 assault rifle, plus thousands of rounds of ammunition? He was dressed in camouflage and was wearing a mask. Adam weighed 120 pounds. He wouldn't be able to do it. And why would Adam wear a bulletproof vest and a mask if he planned to kill himself? There were no pictures or videos of any of the weapons or murdered victims in the school, or of the crime scene, or of the entrance to the school. There were cameras all over the school, just like it was in 9/11. But we did not get to see any of them. The front glass near the front door of the school was said to be busted out by a rapid-fire shooting by Adam. Remember that Adam was a small, 120 pounds youngster who had a touch of autism. All the weapons and ammo, it's very illogical that it could be done by him. Plus, no one from outside the school called 911. Only one call came from the school. There's no picture or video of the window being shot up. No person could enter the school after the school began without being let in by a person in the office. The story is that Adam used the assault rifle and blasted the window near the door. After the glass broke, he was able to open the door and gain his entrance. Why didn't the teachers put the children out the window instead of locking the door and having the children hiding under the desk or being put in a closet? The shooter could have shot the door out, just like he supposed he did when he entered the front door. A lot of the teachers put the students in the closet and or read them Christmas stories. One report of a teacher who was shot several times by the shooter, who actually fired shots through the door. And why were the children told to not look when they were not going to cross any of the murder scenes? The story was all the murders were in the two classrooms in the hallway that was just in the front of the school. It was reported by the Connecticut coroner that all the children were murdered by the AR-15. The assault weapon was used to shoot one of the school's pupils 11 times at close range. If this was the case, there'd be very little left of that child. Adam allegedly changed the magazines 8 to 10 times in order to fire all the shots. The coroner testified that all the shots in the school were from the AR-15, and only the shots that he murdered himself were from his pistol. Of course, there is a video of the officers taking the AR-15 out of the trunk of the car in the school parking lot. So we are to believe that Adam murdered all the children, shot himself to death, and then put the assault weapon in the trunk of the car, and then went back into the school and died for the second time. Was Adam a zombie? The responding officer said they shot the windows out of the front entrance. Why would they have to do that if Adam had already previously done this in order to gain entrance? Here's a good one. The state of Connecticut has a state law against automatic weapons. How could Nancy Lanza register an automatic weapon if it was illegal in her state? The first responders were at the school in 7 minutes after the first shots were reported. ATF and FBI agents were there too. There was a mock meeting at another school about 25 minutes from Sandy Hook. How could the ATF and the FBI agents at Newtown be at Newtown so quickly unless it was planned in advance? The officer of Newtown got to the school too late and couldn't even get in. The district of Newtown had a record of practically no crime at all. One officer was assigned to stay at each of the victims' families. That's 26 families for over a couple months. So 26 officers plus many others if it was a 24-hour shift. They have money problems, but no issue here. Are the officers still there? All the evidence was destroyed. Newtown Elementary has moved 5 miles away to a vacant middle school, and they now are remaking Newtown Elementary School. There must be no money problems. This is very similar to what happened at the movie theater and the 9/11 situation. The fast destruction of the crime scene. At least two other shooters were captured. One was placed in handcuffs, and the other was captured in the woods behind the school. But the police deny that this happened. One school official reported that she hid in a closet till 1 p.m. But this contradicts the statement of the Connecticut State Police that they searched the entire building to make sure there was no other shooter anywhere. There's much more, but this is enough. On and on this goes. It was like the shooting at the movie theater a couple months before the shooting at the elementary school. It was like the horrific 9/11 episode. We could make a list of questions about the problems with what happened on 9/11 with no serious answers given by the government. For example, how did a 47-story building come down in 7 seconds later in the afternoon on September 11, 2001? Take a second and just think about this. This was the building where the mayor of New York City had his place of safety in case of attack. It came down in 7 seconds. And what did the 9/11 Commission report tell about how this happened? They didn't mention it at all. They said nothing about it. So tell me, how can we believe that report? When 9/11 occurred, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing. It was like when JFK was murdered. And I would guess that you could too. I believed everything the government told me about what happened on 9/11. 4 airplanes were hijacked by Arabs carrying box cutters. 2 crashed into the Twin Towers. 1 into the Pentagon. And the last one crashed into a hole in Pennsylvania. The fact there was nothing, no parts of a crashed plane, no black boxes, no passengers, no luggage, nothing in the little hole in Pennsylvania, and nothing at the Pentagon, didn't seem to make any difference to the government, as they later put up a memorial at the scenes of both crashes. I had been Sandy Hooked on 9/11, but not again. America has been Sandy Hooked. They have played the part of an audience watching a gargantuan theoretical production with fake actors, fake news coverage, and a fake narrative. I'm not saying nothing happened at Sandy Hook and that children weren't killed. What I'm saying is that everything after the event was constructed as complete theater. The selective publicizing of only those parents the media wants you to see. The refusal to release actual video footage from inside this school and outside this school. The rapid alteration of the storyline to shift from handguns to the now infamous AR-15 that the media claims was used in the shooting. But it's not just Sandy Hook. I'm using the term Sandy Hook in a much larger sense to encompass the recent fake inauguration of a president with a fake alias, an obviously fake birth certificate, his faked in-the-law operations, and his faked Social Security card. The band was faked. The live singing was faked. The speech was teleprompter-driven. The news coverage was an orgy of fairyland wishes that have virtually no chance of ever coming true. But it's not just Obama. George Bush masterminded the fake war on terror, and the fake justifications for the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, with all its faked authority, but very real sexual molestation at the airports. The federal government, whether under a Republican or a Democratic administration, operates with the arrogance of faked authority that it was never granted to it under the Constitution, and definitely not under God's laws. But you are suckered into it thanks to the help of the fake mainstream media news running fake stories based on fake audience, such as the CDC ridiculously claiming flu shots are, quote, 62% effective, unquote. The FDA readily accepts fake medical studies as scientific evidence. The psychotic industry invents thousands of fake diseases and then claims the sole authority to diagnose and treat these fictitious conditions. The junk food industry runs endless television ads, creating false impressions about their products, which are loaded with artificial, faked ingredients. Yes, the blueberries in your blueberry muffins are faked. The aroma of McDonald's French fries is faked with chemicals. The fresh pink color of the sliced ham that many Judeo-Christians bought and ate is also faked with sodium nitrite. Mammograms generate 10 fake diagnoses of breast cancer for every real one. Chemotherapy is fake medicines, quackery, that actually causes cancer. In fact, the entire breast cancer industry is right now running a massive hoax by faking its searching for the cure for cancer. An absurd idea, given that such a cure would instantly put the multi-billion-dollar cancer industry out of business. The entire gun control argument we're all hearing right now is a complete hoax. How will removing guns from the hands of law-abiding citizens magically cause criminals to turn them in? It won't. The argument is a hoax based on nothing more than irrational emotional appeal. The banking industry is a grand global conspiracy of financial fakery, where they steal the value of your money by generating more free money for themselves. The Federal Reserve, as you know, is not federal, and it has no reserve. It's all been faked. Elections are faked on a grand scale. Nearly all online polls run by the mainstream media are completely faked, manipulated to show the results they want. In the election of 2012, there are records at polling sites that are more than 150% of the registered voters actually voted. What a good turnout that was. And in some polls, there was a unanimous vote for Obama. Internet website awards are completely faked. Google News is faked because they all delete the real news sources from their system and run only the conformist mainstream news sources. The TV news, you see, is completely faked because all the real stories are spiked, while fake stories are scripted in order to show you only what they want you to see. Government job numbers are faked, and of course a politician in Washington says they're going to cut something. That's always a complete fake. What they actually mean is that they're going to slightly reduce the growth in spending. The federal tax code is complete fakery. The government doesn't need a dime from you to operate itself. It can just create all the money it needs out of thin air, just as we witness with the bankster bailouts. The government can even create these new trillion-dollar coins to get out of debt. So if it can create trillion-dollar coins, why doesn't it need any money from you or I? It doesn't. The tax code exists solely as a form of social control. The educating of our children in public school was largely faked. Faked history, fake science, fake social studies. Public schools don't teach children about reality. They teach children to conform to popular mythologies. For example, have you ever heard of a public school teaching the students about the evil of usury banking? About the evil of homosexuality? About the evil of same-sex marriages? About the evil of abortions? You've all been Sandy Hooked. Not just from the actual Sandy Hook incident, but from birth. You're living in a world that's made of fantasies, a world of corporations. The birth certificates and Social Security cards all put us into the status of individual corporations. Your mind is used by the manipulators for target practice. You're a puppet of their machinations. You have been taught that everything real, gold, guns, marriage, and organic farming is actually bad. If you want to be considered good, you must conform as an obedient order taker who relishes his own enslavement. Rock and roll is fakery. This highly popular and addictive music came to America less than 60 years ago with the message that it, the new world, would change the world to immoral sex and life with drugs. Let's see. Drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Can the church stop this music? No, it's now joined with it. It plays rock and roll in the church. What does all this really matter? We are made up of a body with a soul and with a spirit. First, the body. Are our bodies better off with all this fakery that is rampant in the land? Most people my age are in a rest home, are already dead. Many are in wheelchairs, paralyzed, and are deformed. They have eaten ham, bacon, pork chops, shrimp, clams, catfish, lobsters, and many other foods that God has instructed us that is not good for us to eat these polluted foods. Many of our peers have become drunk by drinking too much alcohol and have their marriages ended by the related sin of alcoholism. I didn't drink alcohol, but I drank gallons of soda pop when I was a young adult. These drinks, which are only about 100 years old or younger, are probably one of the worst things on your diet. Phosphoric acid, sugar, artificial fake coloring, etc. They do much harm to the body. And the tap water. Most cities have added toxins in it, especially the aluminum byproduct, fluoride. In most big city water supplies, there are toxins that have come into the water sources from fertilizer and drugs that have been flushed down the toilet. And how many of us eat corn? Corn is the food that our God has instructed us that we can eat. But most of the corn in the USA is genetically modified organism corn. What is that doing to our bodies? We are eating food from farmers that don't follow God's laws of farming. Our food lacks the natural nutrition that is full of artificial fake vitamins due to poor soil environment. When a child is born, he is almost immediately faced with approximately 30-shot vaccines. And this is just the beginning. We are about to be forced to use a medical system which has as its emblem two squakes squirming up a pole, the caduceus. I looked up the caduceus. I Googled it. And I found something very surprising. It said the caduceus, the traditional symbol of Hermes, features two snakes around an often winged staff that's used as a symbol of medicine in the United States. Now, there it is. You got the two snakes going up the one rod. There's the wing rod. This is what Hermes carried around. Hermes, the messenger of the gods. He carried this. I think, why is this used as the symbol of medicine? It actually started in 1902 by the United States Army Marine Corps, their medical division. But it says the two snake caduceus, is that right? Caduceus design has ancient and consistent associations with commerce, trickery, thievery. What does this have to do with medicine? The tangible association of the caduceus with medicine has occurred through the ages, where it was sometimes associated with alchemy, and wisdom. And then they go on and say this: the modern use of the caduceus as a symbol of medicine became established in the United States in the late 19th and early 20th century as a result of documented mistakes, misunderstandings, and confusion. They admit it. I think it should be their symbol, because what they do is trickery. And they basically have our citizens in bad shape. But that's enough about the caduceus. That's another sermon. The soul. Your soul is being stolen with every hoax, every fake event, and every deception being played out in front of us. When the insidious power brokers achieve such deep deceptions, they rob from you the opportunity to explore and express your true highest self during this short life experience. Instead of being the amazing thinker, artist, innovator, and leader you have the potential to be, you end up becoming a mind-controlled, obedient conformist who is afraid to stand out. The deceivers are stealing your life from you, and they are turning a life that could have had value into an unremarkable life that serves no higher purpose. Maybe that's why suicide is one of the highest forms of death among the young people. But there's a third thing. We're body, soul, and spirit. The fakery's attempt to destroy our spirit. This is the most damaging consequences of all. The fakery says that homosexuality is an alternate lifestyle. It doesn't say that it's an abomination of God. What offspring does it produce if a woman marries a woman? Or a man marries a man? None. They can adopt, but they can't have their own children. One of the main purposes of a marriage is to produce like seed children. The fakery says that mixed marriages are an alternate lifestyle, not an abomination of God. The Israelites were to be a separate people, forbidden to miscegenate with giants and with other different racial beings. For that would forever destroy their seed from having the Spirit of God. Esau married into the wrong seed. And even though he wept, his hybrid offspring was forever out of the covenant and became the permanent enemy of Israel. This fakery says that woman can do any job that man can do. They are equal. So she is now like she is in Israeli, available to fight on the front lines. This is an abomination of God. Name the women who fought in the Revolutionary War, the Spanish-American War, the War of Northern Aggression, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, Desert Storm I, and Desert Storm II. There were almost none. Arguments against women in direct combat have nothing to do with courage, skill, patriotism, or dedication. Most women are equal to most men in all these categories, and are superior to men in many other areas, as our educational graduation rates at every level indicate. Women tend to excel as sharpshooters and pilots. But ground combat is one area where women, through quirks of biology and human nature, are not equal to men. A difference that should be celebrated rather than rationalized is incorrect. Did God's covenant people have women in the army? Or did God command Israel that men were the ones who were to make up their army? Numbers chapter 1, 2, and 3. It reads, "Take the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel, after their families, by the house of their fathers, with the number of their names, every male by their polls, from 20 years old and upward, all who were able to go to war in Israel. Thou and Aaron shall number them by their armies." They had to number all the men 20 years and old. No females, 20 years and older. We do what, 18 years, and now it's men and women. The fakery says that all faiths are equal. This is an abomination to God. I read you where there's people from Burma coming over here, and they got their church right about 10 miles from here, 5 miles from here. What does it mean when we read the Waldensians? 500 years before the Protestant Reformation, that they did not worship with Roman Catholics. And the Catholics martyred them. They believed the Roman Church is the house of confusion, Babylon the whore, and the synagogue of the devil, contrary to the faith. Do all peoples worship the same God? Are all the elect people and the non-elect people of the world on the same status? Are Buddhist, Hindu, Jew, Catholic, and Judeo-Christian the same as a true Christian identity believer? Doesn't the Bible tell us to worship only the God who brought our forefathers out of Egypt? Doesn't the Bible tell us to worship only the God who brought our forefathers out of Egypt? Now let's go back 3,500 years and see what Israel did in the summer time that we're now in. So, we read Exodus chapter 1, 1 through 7. It told about the small family of Jacob who went to Egypt, but after 215 years, they had grown with great increase after their immigration into Egypt. This was the promise of the Abrahamic covenant that was fulfilled in a short 2 centuries. And it says at the verse 7, "And the children of Israel were fruitful. They increased abundantly and multiplied." And then it says they waxed exceedingly mighty. And the land was filled with them. Exodus 10, 8 through 10. "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier. They're mightier than we. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply and it come to pass that when war occurs, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land. The new king felt that the former rulers could unite with the large number of Israelites and attack Egypt, for the former rulers had been kind to the Israelites. Now, in Exodus 11 through 14, therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. And they made their life bitter with hard bondage, in mortar and in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. Now, it doesn't tell you in this verse, but the Israelites had begun to forget the Lord God of their fathers. And they began to conform to the idolatry of the Egyptians. All manner of service in the field, the process of irrigating the land in higher lands was very laborious. But I'm saying, what was the cause of the evil treatment? The prophet Ezekiel records, that'd be the next one. The prophet Ezekiel records the fact of this apostasy. It's found in Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 8. But they rebelled against me and would not hearken unto me. They did not every man cast away the abominations of their eyes, neither did they forsake the idols of Egypt. Then I said, I will pour out my fury on them to accomplish my anger against them. Where? In the midst of the land of Egypt. Now, Howard Rand, in his book Primogenesis on page 138, says, thus Ezekiel declared Israel suffered in Egypt because of their apostasy when they turned to idols instead of the Lord. Spiritual decency is always followed by physical trouble and hardship. There is no exception to the rule. That should make us tremble. Israel came into a period of trouble and suffering because they had turned away from their God. There arose a new king over Egypt who was not acquainted with Joseph or with his deeds in behalf of the Egyptian people. He told the Egyptians that the children of Israel were more numerous and mightier than they, and that they must deal wisely with them, lest in the case of war, they join with the enemy. Taskmasters were placed over the Israelites, and they were afflicted with heavy burdens. Men of Israel were compelled to build the cities of Pithom and Ramses for Pharaoh. But the more the Egyptians afflicted them, the more Israel multiplied and grew in strength, even though their taskmaster became more and more exacting in the work and services required of them. Every means as used by the Egyptians for the purpose of crushing the children of Israel. Now we go to Exodus chapter 15 through 22. And the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of which they give the two names of the midwives. And he said, when you do the office to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, If it be a son, then you shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. Here's a very interesting verse. But the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the male children alive. The king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing and saved the male children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women. Oh, there's a difference there. For they are lively and are delivered before the midwives come in unto them. So they deliver the children before we get there. Therefore, God dwelt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he gave them families. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born, you shall cast unto the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. Now, there's something about this. The Bible doesn't tell you what happened. Why did the Egyptians want to eradicate only the boys and not the girls? It was because of the prophecy that was known at this time. It is told by Josephus in the Antiquities of the Jews. It's book 2, chapter 10, section 3, page 58. It says, the child, out of dread of whose nativity the Egyptians have doomed the Israelite children to destruction, shall be this child of thine, and shall be concealed from those who watch to destroy him. And when he is brought up in a surprising way, he shall deliver the Hebrew nation from the distress they are under from the Egyptians. God made the Israelites have numerous families because the midwives feared God and not the ruler over Egypt. The Egyptians had to deal wisely with the Israelites, lest they multiply and become even more numerous. As a result, they attempted to do the following. Number one, they took care to keep the Israelites poor by charging them with heavy taxes. Does that sound familiar? Number two, they made them slaves. They had taskmasters set over them, directed to afflict them with burdens. They made them serve with rigor, so that their lives became bitter to them, intending thereby to first break their spirits. They tried to ruin their health and shorten their days, and so diminish their numbers. That ring a bell? They tried to discourage them from marrying, since the children would be born in slavery. And it is to be feared that the oppression they were under brought over many of them to join with the Egyptians in their idolatrous worship. However, they were kept a distinct body, unmingled with the Egyptians, and by their other customs separate from them, which was the Lord's doing, and it was marvelous. The more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, sorely to the grief and vexation of the Egyptians. The blood of the martyrs was the seed of the church. The midwives were commanded to murder the newborn boys. Pharaoh's project was secretly to engage the midwives to murder the boy child as soon as they were born, and then to lay it upon the difficulty of the birth or some mischance common in that case. But they feared God. They regarded his law and dreaded his wrath more than Pharaoh's, and thereby saved the young boy's life. When this project did not take effect, Pharaoh gave public orders to all his people to drown all the male children of the Hebrews. The murder of the young boys did not continue for very long, When one pharaoh died, another rose up in his place that was governed by these same maxims and was as cruel to Israel as his predecessors. They struggled to the deliverance at last. How did they achieve it? They cried. They began to think of God under their troubles and to return to Him from the idols they had served. But before God unbound them, He put it in their heart to cry unto Him. In Numbers 20:16, we read, "And when we cried unto the Lord," what did He do? It says He heard our voice. And then He sent an angel and has brought us forth out of Egypt. God heard their crying and their groaning. He knew the burdens they groaned under and the blessings they groaned after. In Exodus chapter 2, 23 through 25, it says, "And it came to pass in process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage. And they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of their bondage. And then God heard their groaning." And then God remembered something. God remembered the covenant that He made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God knew their plight. God remembered the covenant that He made with Abraham. It was an unconditional covenant. Moses looked upon them and helped them. God had a respect unto them, a favorable respect to them as being His own children. Now my conclusion. I believe we're living in very similar times that our forefathers lived in Egypt. Let's think about this. Didn't we start off in a good condition? 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, there was very little miscegenation. Women and men were serving in their biblical roles. Music, books, and entertainment were mainly biblical. There were no legal abortions, no legal same-sex marriages, no open homosexuality, no open unwed marriages. There were church-operated charities and counseling. The whites lived basically separate from all the races. There was no major breaking of the weekly Sabbath. And there was definitely no drug medicine. What a different world. But a new king arose in Egypt. And the Israelites began to follow other gods. And thus they had to endure the curses of breaking God's laws. We've done the same thing. We have a mulatto president. And we have failed to follow practically all of God's laws. We're suffering God's curses. Has anybody ever considered the following? The top is the murders that have occurred in the United States by gunfire. You'll notice there's more suicides than homicides. Unintentional shootings is 851. And there were 222 they couldn't determine what the reason was. But altogether, people murdered using guns was 31,943. How about the bottom? Adverse drug reactions, 106,000. Outpatients, 199,000. Medical errors, 91,000. Other medical related. Total medical death by errors, almost 800,000. I believe it's much more dangerous to face your doctor than it is to face an enemy with a gun. In fact, there are more suicides than homicides. And it's several thousand times more deadly to participate in the onslaught of drugs than it is to worry about being murdered by a person shooting a gun. Outlaw mainstream doctors and drugs, it'd be much more reasonable than outlawing guns. Jeremiah has something to say about the situation. Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 15 through 17 says, "Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination?" He says, "Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall. At the time that I visit them, they shall be cast down, saith the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, stand in the ways and see, and ask for what? Ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And walk in it, and you shall find rest in their souls. But the people said, we will not walk therein." Where? In the old ways. "Also, I set a watchman over you, saying, hearken to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, we will not hearken." Jeremiah told Israel they were not ashamed that they had committed all these abominations. Well, we have committed these sins too. He told them to see and ask for the old paths. But we too said, we will not walk therein. America refuses to go back to the way the things used to be. Jeremiah then said, the watchman will sound the trumpet. But the people would say, we will not hearken. I think we have answered the same way. Jeremiah 6, verse 19, part B says, "I will bring evil upon this people, even the fruit of their thoughts." Why? "Because they have not hearkened unto my words, nor to my law, but have rejected it." Is that what you say to your child who refuses to do what you tell him to do? God then says that he would bring evil upon this people, his covenant people, because they failed to hearken to his words and law, but completely rejected it. Eventually, the Israelites were so oppressed that they finally cried out to their God, and he remembered what? The covenant that he made with his people. Will the Israelites in America do the same? Will history repeat? Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.